from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up in forums next hour, Urus arctos horribilis, the grizzly bear, roamed California in large numbers until the early 1900s when gold rush settlers decimated the population. Now an environmental group is circulating a petition asking California's Fish and Game Commission to study the feasibility of reintroducing the bear into remote parts of the Sierra Nevadas. The state calls the plan a non-starter, but it has put a renewed spotlight on this noble animal. And in this hour, we talk all about the history and ecology of the grizzly bear, which can run as fast as 35 miles per hour, despite weighing over 400 pounds. Join us for Forum after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to another hour of this morning's Forum program. You see the California grizzly bear on the state flag and the state seal, but rarely in the flesh and fur walking around, at least not in this state. Now, the Center for Biological Diversity is circulating a petition asking California's Fish and Game Commission to study the feasibility of reintroducing the grizzly bear into remote parts of the Sierra Nevadas and to designate parts of California as recovery areas for grizzlies, part of what has come to be known as the rewilding movement, to put wild animals susceptible to dwindling or endangered populations back into natural habitats. The grizzly bear has become nearly extinct in California, so can they be reintroduced into the state? And what about their history? We take up this topic of grizzly bears in this 4-hour. That is grizzly bears in California, but grizzly bears in general. Let me tell you who's joining us. Craig Miller's here in studio, science editor for KQED. You'll find more about the grizzly debate, including maps and one of the new Bring Back the Bears campaign videos at kqed.org/science. Craig, good to have you. Welcome.
Good morning, Michael.
Good morning also to Jeff Miller, who's here with us in studio as well, conservation advocate for the Center for Biological Diversity, leading the push to reintroduce the grizzly bear to the Sierra Nevadas. Welcome.
Good morning. Thanks, Michael.
Good to have you. Also good to have Greg Lozinski, who's with us by phone this morning, spokesperson for the Interagency Grizzly Bear Committee, that is the IGBC, and regional conservation educator at the Idaho Department of Fish and Game. Welcome, Greg Lozinski.
Good to be here.
And good to have Peter Alagana with us as well, Associate Professor of History, Geography, and Environmental Studies at University of California, Santa Barbara, author of After the Grizzly, Endangered Species and the Politics of Place in California. Welcome, Peter Alagana.
Great to be back with you, Michael.
Yeah, great to have you back. And let's begin, Craig Miller, with you. Begin by saying that these noble creatures used to roam around the valleys and foothills and coastal areas of California in significant numbers. 1924 becomes kind of the marker year. Take us back, I mean, historically.
Yeah, 1924 is the sort of officially accepted date of the last bear. That's when the last bear was shot in Tuolumne County. And just to clarify something, the California grizzly is considered extinct, not nearly extinct. Although, interestingly, they still get occasional reported sightings of grizzly bears. Just after I filed my story a couple of months ago, I heard from someone who claims to be an expert and swears they saw a grizzly bear, near Mount Lassen. But
they roam a lot.
Yeah, well, they do. But I don't think they roam quite that far. They can't be sure that they're completely gone, quite frankly, but the state wildlife officials treat most of these sightings as Bigfoot sightings, basically.
UFOs, almost.
Yeah, yeah, kind of.
Well, but we're talking about literally about the slaughter of 10,000 after the gold rush began.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and no one knows for sure how many bears were actually roaming California. But you brought up an important point earlier to say that they were pretty much everywhere except in the most arid sections of the state. In fact, there's a great map, which you can see on our website, that the naturalist Sehart Merriam drew up by hand, around the turn of around the turn of the 20th century, when he supposedly identified 7 subspecies of California grizzly in California, all the way from the mountains down to the coast, where they were known to feed on whale carcasses. And people on riverboats reported seeing them swimming across the Carquinez Strait.
So they were hunted, they were trapped, and really into extinction.
Yes.
And that's it's sad in many ways, but now we're going to find out about the whole controversy about reintroducing them. And this has gone through some various iterations of one sort or another. There was a petition first to the feds And now there's about thousands of signatures. Now we're talking about a petition to the state.
Yeah, Jeff's organization filed the – I should probably defer to him on this, but you guys basically filed a petition that was aimed at federal wildlife agencies, right? And you haven't really confronted the state agencies head-on.
Talk about that, Jeff. And again, Jeff Miller is with the Center for Biological Diversity.
Yeah, I wish I could say bringing grizzlies back to California was entirely our idea, but actually we stole it from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. You know, grizzlies in the lower 48 are protected as a threatened species federally. From 50,000 historically, now there's only about 1,500 or 1,800 in five isolated populations, mostly around Yellowstone and Glacier National Parks. Back in 2011, Fish and Wildlife Service scientists said in order to recover the grizzly bear, we need to look at reintroducing it to some of its former haunts. And some of the places that suggest themselves would be the parts of the Cascades, maybe around the Grand Canyon. And interestingly for us, some of the remote areas of the Sierra Nevada, particularly around Yosemite National Park, Sequoia and Kings Canyon National Parks, and some of the remote national forests around there. So, the Fish and Wildlife Service said grizzlies aren't going to survive just being in 4% of their historic habitat in the continental U.S. We've got to get them back into other areas. So we took that to heart. We filed a legal petition, asked them to study just that, and unfortunately, they rejected that. And actually, we're kind of going in the other direction right now. The feds are about to try to remove the Endangered Species Act protections for Yellowstone bears, even though they face all kinds of new threats like climate change. A lot of their food sources have been collapsing. All the states are now rushing to gear up for trophy hunting of these bears again as soon as they're delisted. So California is looking more and more important as far as just genetic diversity and getting bears.
Yeah, there's a big ecological argument here, isn't there?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. They're just not going to survive in the long term if we allow them to be in just a few areas. And you've already got federal wildlife managers trucking in bears from Alaska and Canada to prevent inbreeding in the big populations up near Yellowstone. So there's no reason we shouldn't look at reintroducing them to California.
Yeah, I'm hearing Greg Luzinski's voice here. Greg, you want in here? Go ahead.
Yeah, there has been no augmentation of bears from Alaska and Canada into the Yellowstone ecosystem or into the lower 48.
But there are those bears up in Alaska, and there are also bears in Wyoming and Montana and Idaho, where you are, Greg. And but the sustainability is what we're talking about here, and the concern of sustainability, and also the California desire on the part of people like Jeff Miller to have them back here. We did, we had a conversation with somebody from the Fish and Game, and I wanted to get Jordan Traverso. I wanted to get her on record here and hear what she has to say, so let's hear that.
It's not much of a great idea to the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. Where grizzlies were, they used to roam coastal oak woodlands and even beaches, and they'd even eat whale carcasses. They were in the Sierra Nevada, but they wouldn't just be in the Sierra Nevada. And so you're talking about a state that's approaching 40 million people, and bringing them back would suggest to bring them into places where people now live and recreate and raise livestock. We have issues already with animals that get into human interactions. And we have what's called a depredation permit for things like mountain lions that would harm livestock or other property. And then bringing grizzly bears could potentially necessitate the same kind of depredation permit. And then we'd have to go and take bears that were being destructive. And that would be counterproductive to the reintroduction.
If they essentially put something forward that's detailed and they have the kind of public support that signatories seem to suggest, would you have to think again about this?
Well, what I think would happen, we don't really have a process for reintroducing animals. What I think would happen is they'd have to submit some kind of proposal to the California Fish and Game Commission, and the commission would then review that proposal. An official petition of that sort would certainly be reviewed like any other, but that's not what they have done at this point. It's more of just a informational signature gathering, kind of showing support. Do you want grizzly bears here or not? But it doesn't really. That's not an official petition as far as what the commission is used to looking at. Bears are very, very smart, and they are very easily getting into houses, and there's a lot of problems already up in the areas that are bear habitat where people are now living.
They're especially smart when it comes to food. I have stories I can tell, and many of us do.
One of the former directors of the California Department of Fish and Wildlife had started out as a bear biologist, and he used to say that bears are so smart that if they had opposable thumbs, we'd be the ones eating out of garbage cans.
Well, that was Jordan Traverso, spokesperson for the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. And she said there's no petition on her desk that the idea of reintroducing the grizzly to California is a non-starter. And, well, Craig Miller, you wanted to respond.
Well, just two things here. First of all, when Jordan talks about bears, she means black bears. There are lots of those in California. They estimate anywhere from 30 to 60,000.
Isn't another name for grizzlies a brown bear?
Right. Grizzlies are brown bears, and they can go two and a half times the size of black bears, which is why you open up a whole other conversation. The question of public support is an interesting one because we really don't know what the level is. When I talk to people for my story about there, I got basically two reactions. One was a sort of general cluelessness about, what bears we have and what we don't. And the other was people who were familiar with grizzlies basically saying, let me think about that. And I ran into a couple of women at the California Museum when there was an exhibit on grizzlies in Sacramento recently, and two women from Contra Costa County. And I asked them what they would think about the idea.
I have done backpacking, I should say, to be honest. I have done some, and I haven't done a lot, and my family backpacks, and I'm not exactly crazy about the grizzly bear coming back.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
I don't trust him to stay put.
Yeah.
And when we looked at that footprint, oh, my God.
That was the general reaction, is that when you talk to people about this, is the OMG reaction, that you just got.
Well, that's the big argument, Jeff Miller, that you hear against this whole idea, the effect it would have on humans and recreation. They do roam a lot. They're going to be looking for food and so forth. You got 40 million people in California, and the effect would be considerable. I mean, there was a woman, a backpacker, who was killed in Yellowstone by a bear that was felt it was protecting its young. I mean, it was a kind of anomalous situation. Some people think black bears, grizzlies, you're as likely to be harmed by a mosquito. But there are other people who see this as a real danger.
Yeah, definitely. Grizzlies are awesome and intimidating and very powerful creatures, and they evoke a very emotional response from people, both positive and negative. And personally, I've been bluff charged by a mama grizzly with a cub before, so I viscerally understand how people, can be scared of these bears. But
scared of the footprint, even. Yeah.
But we're capable of separating emotion from facts. So let's look at grizzlies, and that's what we're asking. Is, in reality, grizzly attacks are very rare. Very rare. In Yellowstone National Park, we've got more than 500 bears in the park. That's grizzlies. And 3 million annual visitors. You are literally more likely to be killed by a honeybee than you are by a grizzly bear. That's not to say they're not dangerous, but there are things we can do. We know from living with them in Yellowstone and Alaska, we know there are things we can do to minimize interactions, to minimize conflicts, to not make them think of us as potential food sources. And I think the state owes it to the people of California and its heritage to at least study the idea before just dismissing it outright. And that's all we're asking, is let's do a feasibility study and see if it can be done.
You want a feasibility study. You also got a big campaign going and some very funny videos. And this is something that you want citizens to take seriously. Let me go to Greg Luzinski. He's a spokesperson for the Interagency Grizzly Bear Committee and actually regional conservation educator at the Idaho Department of Fish and Game. There is a lot of concern, not only by the Center for Biological Diversity, but by many who champion the whole idea of reintroducing grizzlies as part of this rewilding movement, Greg, which I'm sure you're quite familiar with, that people need to know more about the grizzly bear. What, in your judgment, should they know, or ought they to know?
Well, an important thing is that the IGBC, has been working for over 30 years to recover grizzly bears in those places where they have the most chance for success. And again, once upon a time, there were 50,000 plus grizzly bears in the lower 48, and that was, before pre-civilization, so to speak. And the population areas that were identified as recovery areas are the places that, again, have the best chance for recovery. But at the same time, there's still lots of concern for human interaction in those spots. So what we want people to know is that in places like Yellowstone and in Northern Continental Divide ecosystem, those populations have met recovery goals. They are recovered, and that we would like to move on to some of the other areas that were designated as really prime habitat. Again, if funds were unlimited and resources and staffing, then there is lots of places that you could consider grizzly bears. But we still have not done the job that we need to do in the areas that have been identified as the best places for success.
I think you've hit on one of the main problems, that is the limited resources. But how do you determine what habitats are strong enough to support?
It's not so much the habitat, it's the human habitat. Again, a bear is an incredible omnivore. There's been lots of discussion about climate change and things like that affecting food sources. And the thing that we have found out is that bears can survive just about anywhere, incredibly adaptable. And so the actual physical habitat isn't going to be the number one concern. The concern is going to be how humans interact, the social acceptability of those animals. And again, even in the areas that we've identified as potential recovery areas where human interactions would be minimal, we're still facing lots of challenges. We start talking about places like California, then we're getting into a situation where we're definitely stepping into lots of human conflict potential. So again, we would like to scientifically recover these animals in the places that we think they have the best chance and then move forward. But honestly, right now, litigation from groups like the CBD actually stand in the way of us moving forward and use up vital resources. So what I always like to tell folks is if they truly love bears, they need to let science do its job and move forward.
What do you say to that, Jeff Miller?
Well, the Fish and Wildlife Service's own scientists are the ones that recommended getting bears back into former habitats, and they're the ones that raised the issues with genetic inbreeding and the lack of long-term viability. And I absolutely disagree that bears in Yellowstone and those areas are anywhere near recovery. They face just a host of threats.
Wait a second, we're cross-talking here, but go ahead, Greg Lisinski.
Since 2004, every criteria set forth in the recovery plan has been met and exceeded for the Yellowstone population, and that's the problem we have. We understand that folks love bears, but they need to step back and let the science that's been peer-reviewed state the goals, meet the goals, and then move on.
Well, I want to bring a little levity in this because I was saying before we went on the air that Jeff Miller and those who want to reintroduce the bears may have been hurt by that ecological warrior Leonardo DiCaprio's film Revenant. It puts things in kind of a different perspective, admittedly. But aside from the human factor and the habitats and everything, this is, Peter Alagona, an endangered species. And I think people have to realize that the black bear really needs some help.
Not black bear.
The brown bear. Yeah, the black bear's
doing fine.
We already put in a separate category. They're doing fine eating everybody's food when it goes to visit various parks and so forth. But the grizzlies are endangered, and let's talk about that with you, Peter. I mean, a lot of people don't need or certainly don't necessarily understand just how endangered they are.
So I think, Michael, it's a good idea to put this in a much broader context. Brown bears are widely distributed throughout the Northern Hemisphere. They occur in Asia, North America, Europe, and even in the Middle East. So globally, they're not in any danger of extinction. But in North America, the situation is quite different. We have large populations in Alaska and Canada. But in the U.S., in the lower 48, they've declined dramatically, and now we only really have them in the North Cascades of Washington, the Northern Rockies of Idaho, Montana, and Wyoming.
The brown bear is all over Europe, really, isn't it? When I talk about endangered, I mean here in this hemisphere.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. And so in part as a consequence of this, we really know very little about grizzlies in California except for a handful of historical texts. The most comprehensive and up-to-date study of grizzlies in California actually was published in 1955. And so we really have a tremendous amount to learn about this. We need to study it. And I think that any conclusions at this point would really be premature. However, I think that it's also important to recognize that there is a broader global context, as you mentioned, for this. And if you'll just humor me for a second, I'll give you an example. A study published in the journal Science in 2014 found that the European Union, which has two-thirds more people, but only half the land area of the lower 48 U.S. states, is teeming with mid-size and large carnivores and omnivores. The EU has around 12,000 wolves, 9,000 lynx, 2,500 wolverines, and about 17,000 brown bears, which is about 10 times as many as in the lower 48 U.S. states. And they don't just live in one area. Brown bears in Europe roam from Greece to Spain and from Norway to Italy. I mean, just think about that. Italy's a country with 20 million more people than California, less than three-quarters of the land, and no real wilderness areas, and they have brown bears. So I think this hits on what Greg was talking about in terms of the kind of human context and the cultural context for bear habitats. And so there are some really interesting questions. What's enabling the Europeans to do this? And also, will California turn out to look more like Idaho or to look more like Italy or something else entirely? It's not entirely clear to me, although there's been tremendous work done in the Northern Rockies, that all of the lessons from that region apply directly to what we might think about and what we might do in the future.
We've also learned a good deal from Canada, haven't we?
Absolutely, yes. But as Greg would probably, I think, agree, the social context in Canada, the geography, the demography, the ecology is quite different. So we do know a lot about brown bears globally. We know a lot about them in the Northern Rockies and Canada and Alaska. We know less about how this might unfold in California. And so as a result, I think we need to study it a lot more. And we, as I said, certainly have a lot more to learn before we should proceed.
And there are, Greg, are there not some serious legal questions that have to be folded into this whole matter?
Oh, certainly, certainly. And again, I think the idea of scientific research before putting a bear in a truck and moving him over is definitely the way that needs to be to go forward. And I would also concur with the statements on Europe. I serve as an advisor to the Slovak Wildlife Society, and I'm actually heading over this fall on a Fulbright to help with reducing human conflicts in the Carpathians between human and bears. And again, it's the human attitudes that make the difference. The bears, again, if they're there, they can learn to survive if the people make the adaptations for the bears.
And let me go back to Craig Miller. Craig, just a quick question, though. Is this going to really open a way for more trophy hunting if bears are reintroduced into California?
Well, presumably, if they were reintroduced anytime soon, they would still be considered endangered and protected from hunting in that way. Although up in Yellowstone, where there's a raging debate about whether they should be delisted or not, which is to say those Endangered Species Act protections would be removed, there are some people who think that that could actually help protect the bears, because then hunters would have a vested interest in maintaining populations. I wanted to bring up the idea about range. You know, we talked about, you know, conflicts with humans. I've read where, you know, an individual adult grizzly male can range up to 2,000 square miles and have a territory that big. Now, Jeff Miller's group has identified about, 8,000 square miles in the High Sierra, Sierra Nevada. That seems like a small area to me, given the range and the ability of these bears to roam.
Well, we're talking about the status of the endangered grizzly bear here in California and in the Northern Hemisphere in light of efforts by one conservation group to reintroduce grizzlies back to California. And I want to hear from you. Many of you have interest in grizzly bears not only in terms of California's history, but just in general. And if you have questions, if you have comments, if you want to weigh in here on this whole question about reintroducing them, it's all this rewilding again, we'd like to hear from you. Our toll-free number is available. It's available now, 866-733-6786. What do you think about reintroducing the grizzly bear to the Golden State? Again, you can join us at 866-733-6786. You can also join us by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or going to our website, kqed.org/forum, and clicking on the segment, or tweet us, Twitter handle @KQEDForum. This is Forum. We're talking about grizzly bears this hour, kicked off by a campaign by the Center for Biological Diversity to reintroduce a grizzly bear to the Sierra Nevadas and make them come alive once again here in California, literally. And we have Jeff Miller from that organization with us in studio. We also have KQED science editor Craig Miller and Greg Luzinski by phone, who's a spokesperson for the IGBC, the Interagency Grizzly Bear Committee, and Peter Alagona, who's an associate professor of history, geography, and environmental studies at UC Santa Barbara and author of After the Grizzly, Endangered Species and the Politics of Place in California. We are going to get you involved in this, and you can become involved in a number of ways, either by calling us at our toll-free number, 866-733-6786, or emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or going to our website, kqed.org/forum. I got to ask you, Jeff Miller, where are these bears going to come from?
Well, that's a good question. That's actually, Just to be clear, we're not asking for any bears to be dropped off in anyone's backyard or the financial district anytime soon. Right now, we're asking the state and the feds to study the feasibility, and that's one of the questions that we looked at. Where would they come from? How many would you need? Where would you put them? How much suitable habitat is there? How many could the habitat support? And I think
presumably a lot of that would be fleshed out in the feasibility study.
Yeah, and I think all your guests you agree that we need this needs to be based on good science and peer reviewed science, and that's exactly what our petition asked to happen. So,
well, Greg Lazinski, yeah. can you give us a sense? I mean, there are a lot of people who have never seen a grizzly bear, maybe conjured them up through filmmaking and the like and everything. Maybe describe. And give us a sort of a visual image or picture of what they look like and what it's like to encounter them?
Well, again, a lot of our mythology or our fairy tales are based around bears because of so much of the similarity in the way they're put together, so to speak, and the way they interact. And so, again, we as humans have a lot of bonds with bears, and so that's why it's a very emotional issue. When it comes to the bear itself, you know, a bear is, especially the brown bear, is just an eating machine because it's got a lot of physical mass that it needs to maintain. And in order to do that, it's pretty much eat when you're not eating, you're sleeping. And then for a little bit of time in the spring, you're mating. But it's all about eating to live to mate and reproduce and keep the species going. The bears are incredibly intelligent. We classify them as a carnivore, but they're really incredible omnivores. They will eat just about anything. Some of their largest calorie foods that are out there are not just things like the whitebark pine nut, and of course things like salmon where they're available. But here in the Yellowstone ecosystem, they eat army cutworm moths. It's actually one of the things that they eat during what we call hyperphagia, which is Latin for pig out, when they're putting on their weight for the fall and going into hibernation. So again, bears are just incredible at finding food. It's all about survival, and they are able to do so if we allow them to. The Yellowstone recovery occurred not because a single bear was brought in, but because the habitat was protected so that the bears could do what bears do best. And again, we've seen that be a success. We like to carry that on elsewhere. But it's more about making humans fit in with the bear than the bear fit in with the humans.
Well, let me go with you, Peter Algona, before I bring our callers into this. We've been getting a lot of people actually emailing and going on our website, drawing parallels between reintroducing the grizzly and the wolf. And you might want to comment on that. But just to give you an example, I'm looking at an email here from a listener named Emily who says, why introduce them only to mercilessly shoot and kill them? That's what we've done with reintroduced wolves.
Well, I think there's one big distinction here, which is that wolves are moving into California on their own, and so we're seeing them recolonize the state after many decades, and they're doing this, on foot, walking in on their very own. Grizzlies would need to be probably brought into the state at some future point, and so that's a pretty big policy and management distinction there. I do think, though, that conservationists in general are more worried about populations than they are necessarily about individuals, although individuals of these big charismatic animals are also very important. And so this question of hunting, I think, would be an important one to address in any policy or management program for a future population of grizzlies. But I think that many people would agree that having a healthy population would probably be a better arrangement or more important in the eyes of many than worrying about the welfare of just one bear among many.
And again, Peter Algona is professor of history, geography, and environmental studies at UC Santa Barbara, author of After the Grizzly. And let's get to our callers, and let's begin, Kim, with you. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi. Normally, I'd support rewilding. However, I learned, being a flight attendant in the 70s during the time when the oil pipeline was being built, that grizzly bears are incredible, beautiful, devastating animals. There was a gentleman on our regular flights from Seattle to Anchorage. I had assumed he'd had a terrible acid burn on his face. There was absolutely no way to recognize his age or anything else. He was a regular passenger. And one day the second officer came to the back and gave me an Alaska magazine. And in it was a 5-page self-written testimony of what happened to him. These grizzly bears are not our little black bears. They are different. Now, if we can do something to you know, here's the situation is when he was stuck and caught by this bear, the bear pushed him against a tree, basically ripped off much of his face, and kept coming back. So it was like a cat with a mouse. What can we do to ameliorate these problems that may exist from reintroducing them?
Greg Lozinski.
A bear is going to be a bear. And just like there's humans that have issues, there are bears that have issues. And some of those can be predicted as far as a female with cubs or protecting a food source. But other times you just have a bad bear. And this caller is very correct in saying that these are very powerful animals. And particularly with a brown bear, if it wants to kill you, it will. It's not a matter of if. And so anytime we're around these animals, it's a potential for conflict, and we always need to not be in fear, but we need to be respectful, we need to be smart. And here, where we do have a very healthy bear grizzly population, our number one conflict with bears and humans tends to be hunters, because our hunters are out there in the woods doing everything to be a good hunter, which means increasing the chances for surprising a bear and having a problem.
So, Greg, would we be on their menu? I'm looking at an email here from a listener who says, how logical is it to reintroduce an animal into an area where we humans are on its menu? And remember, grizzlies kill livestock. She's obviously totally against it. But would you say that that's an accurate statement, that we're on their menu? I mean, they eat just about everything.
They eat just about anything, but they don't go out of their way for humans. Let's put it that way. The number of people killed by bears is actually fairly low. The number of people that are actually consumed by bears once being killed is even lower. So, again, we're something that they may consume, but we're not something that they seek out as a food source. They would much rather eat other things than humans.
All right, let me go to another caller here, and you can join us at 866-733-6786. Lawrence, you're on. Good morning.
Yeah. I do lion conservation in East Africa, and one of my projects is on very large commercial ranches in Kenya where they actually want large carnivores, and I think we have a lot to learn from these guys. There is modern technology which can tell you where an animal is virtually every second, and I think that in an initial project to introduce bears, GPS collars could be incredibly useful in keeping them away from people. Number two, I think working on national parks is very much harder than working on private lands, and the ecotourism model on the ranches where I work could work very well in Northern California, a wildlife-based ecotourism economy centered on grizzly bears starting on private land. And lastly, I would like to say that the Sierras are lousy grizzly habitat. There's just not a lot of food there because they're dry. Northwestern California has incredibly abundant oak trees, acorns for grizzlies to eat, relatively few people, and an economy that's been in the pits for ages. And I think that working with private landowners, talking about ecotourism on a large scale, and taking advantage of the most recent technology to know exactly where your bears are and to be able to prevent them from going into towns and farms and so forth, gives us enormous opportunities to bring back this incredible animal.
I think these are reasonably thoughtful ideas, and I thank you for them, Lawrence. Let me get Peter Alagona's response. I mean, GPS seems sensible, so does ecotourism on private lands, and so does maybe looking toward Northwest California.
Well, first, I just want to thank Lawrence Frank from the Museum of Vertebrate Zoology there at Berkeley, who was just on the line. I think he's exactly right.
We didn't know who he was.
Well, I did. So he's definitely an expert on this stuff, and his comments are super helpful. I think that he's really correct in saying, as the representative from the California Department of Fish and Wildlife said earlier on your recording, that historically, from what we can tell from records and specimens and other sources of historical evidence, grizzlies in California were mainly a lowland species. The Sierra Nevada, the parks, the wilderness areas that we have up there, although they're very beautiful, they're largely rock and ice. They're very cold for large portions of the year, covered in snow. They're not particularly biologically productive. Grizzly bears in California were called chaparral bears for a reason. It's because they lived in the coast ranges and the foothills and the valleys. And so I think Lawrence is correct. I think we need to think about that. I think we also need to think about a different dimension, though, too, which is that regardless of you, where you would talk about putting these animals, you're going to be introducing them to areas that have changed dramatically in the decades since grizzlies were last present. even in protected wilderness areas. Changes in vegetation and hydrology and temperature and snowpack, not to mention the loss of important prey species like salmon, all need to play an important role in shaping how we think about this.
And as Craig Miller pointed out, we also have climate change to factor into this, yeah?
Yes. Absolutely. Yeah, there's, you know, the climate is changing everywhere. I think it would probably factored into some of the concerns up in Yellowstone that they had with the white pine nuts were a major source of food for the grizzlies up there. It's a combination of fires and disease affecting the vegetation that they eat. And many of these things are driven by climate.
And let me thank the caller, Lawrence, who's now been ID'd, and we'll get another caller on here from the Santa Cruz Mountains. Bill, you're on.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
I don't know the science, but a couple times a year living in the Santa Cruz Mountains, the proliferation of deer is, I've hit three in the last 3 years. You'll see a half a dozen on your way, either way over the mountain. And I have to believe with all the parkland around here that it could be a really good thing to have more predators than the mountain lions, of which there are very few. And, you know, the argument about that they may kill domestic livestock, I have a friend who raises cattle here nearby, and he gets more money writing off his cattle killed by predation or anything else on his taxes than you'd ever get for selling them.
Yeah, so, but there are a lot of concerns that ranchers have expressed about all this rewilding and where wolves are concerned, or let alone grizzlies. But I'm interested in the point, Craig, that Bill is making about the need for predators. I have a friend who's a gardener who talks about deer as rats with good PR. I mean, you know, little Bambis and all that. People do love deer, but we do have a problem with the deer population.
The potential predation on species that are already here has interestingly been used as both an argument for and against bringing back the grizzly bears. There's the point the caller just made, but also Mark Kenyon, who's the top bear guy at State Fish and Wildlife here in California, said that the deer population in the state has actually been declining, and it's really unknown what sort of an effect grizzlies would have on that. And people have said, because the California grizzly is extinct, people have said that any grizzly you bring into California is essentially introducing an invasive species because things have changed so much. Other people say that's splitting hairs.
Well, let's hear from more of our callers, and we'll go next to you. Carol, you're on the air with us on Forum. Good morning.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm just kind of curious how they can reintroduce a species into an area where, you know, obviously people backpack in California a lot. There's a lot of people moving out into those areas. And what about just concentrating on where those bears are already located and helping that those species to, you know, maintain their environment where they are? I went up into Alaska, and they had a little enclave where bears were on this island, and they protect them, and that's where all their money goes. Tourism's there. They also let hunting in once in a while. So why don't we take our efforts and put them where they already are placed?
That's a reasonable question. I'd like to address to you, Jeff. I mean, you want to designate California as a grizzly population recovery area, but why not put more efforts to where the grizzlies already are?
Well, because we've got problems with where grizzlies already are. You look at Yellowstone, where the feds have proposed removing the federal protections. Wyoming is now trying to fast-track trophy hunting, and soon we'll be trying to target every bear that wanders out of Yellowstone. Those are the exact bears we need to be moving around and connecting with other populations if we're going to have bears in the long term and we're going to have viability.
Yeah,
I mean, if we're willing to leave bears in just 4% of their historic range, I don't think they're going to survive in the long term. And I think we need to, before we just dismiss any potential opportunities, let's study it and see if it's feasible. And yes, there's a host of issues and questions, but you know, people backpack in areas with grizzlies in a lot of areas in North America, and there are things that can be done both to educate people and educate bears.
I know Greg wanted a word in here, but you're going to take this to court if necessary, obviously.
Well, at this point, we certainly are going to challenge the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's decision not to look at bringing grizzlies back to more areas in the lower 48. Right now with California, we're just trying to build public support and get this.
How many signatories?
We've got about 12 or 13,000 right now. We're looking at trying to get 50,000. I think our Bring Back the Bear videos will get a lot of interest. And then we'd like to engage the state and get them, instead of just saying, we're not going to study it, actually get some people who know about this to look at it. And fine, if it's not feasible, tell us why it is or isn't. But if it is, let's not give up this opportunity. Come on, California, step up, reintroduce it or get off the flag.
Well, actually, I'm looking at a comment here from Luke who says, this would be good for the environment and bears, but bad for me who has anxiety, can't be near them. But yay, our flag won't be a lie. You were going to say something, Greg Lozinski?
When it comes to the Yellowstone ecosystem and use of hunting as a management tool, that was part of our recovery plan, and not every bear that would come out would be hunted. It would be very regulated, and we already, each year, through management actions, have to kill 25 to 60 bears as it is. And so it would be part of our overall management strategy. It's the first time we've ever had three states, Montana, Wyoming, and Idaho, actually agree to work together on putting together hunting seasons, which were actually mandated by the Fish and Wildlife Service. It's not that we are in any great desire to nail down the details, but they made that part of the requirements for delisting. But again, the wildlife is managed when it's delisted. That's the whole point of the Endangered Species Act, is to recover a population and then turn management of the population over to the various states. And so, again, we're just following the model that was built into the Endangered Species Act. And so many times people want the first part of the act but not the second part. And again, right now with the limited resources that are out there, we are having trouble moving forward because so many people will not let go of the Yellowstone ecosystem.
Let me go to another caller here. Bob from Rodeo, thanks for waiting. Join us. You're on the air.
I appreciate the topics. I think the whole thing would be a waste of money. There's plenty of black bears in our great state of California. And in the Sierra Nevadas, Tahoe, and all, they're a real nuisance as far as dumpsters, dumps, and breaking into homes. So introducing another bear species, we should not reinvent the wheel. Let's look at Washington, Oregon, Idaho. Small populations and thousands of miles of range for the grizzly, and they still come back to the park. Hotels and dumpsters, they got to be removed.
All right, Bob, I thank you for that comment.
Michael, if I could make a comment in response to that.
This is Peter Algona.
So this is something that you hear very often. I think it's a question mark how the reintroduction of grizzlies, if it were ever to happen in California, would affect other species, including deer. Obviously, we talked about that, but also black bears. I'll just say that there is some historical evidence in the historical record to suggest that when there were grizzlies in California, there were probably far fewer black bears than there are today.
All right, I want to read some comments that are coming in. This is Bill who emails us and says, I was recently in Denali and saw the beautiful grizzly bear in the most remote of North American habitats. A week later, a bear was killed in Denali after engaging human tourists. My point is, human society will have to undergo a radical reformation of its attitude to animals, which are capable of harming us. I love the idea of reintroduction to California, but I'm pessimistic about our ability to allow them into what we consider our world. And here's Beth who writes, since my family has lived here in the California Sierra since the 1800s, I'm curious how many of these folks in this environmental group live in the area where they want the grizzly reintroduced, or how many have ever lived among grizzly bears in Alaska, Montana, etc. Jeff Miller, to you.
We do have an Alaska office and staff who live with grizzly bears. Again, we're talking about reintroducing these deliberately. We're looking at remote areas. We're looking at national parks and national forest land. These are not areas where a lot of people live. And we've learned a lot about how to live with grizzlies and how to minimize interactions. So I don't think any of these are things that can't be overcome. But again, not a waste of money to study getting, our iconic species back in our state.
Well, we're getting, people weighing in on some strong opinions here. This is Rick who writes, this is a very bad idea. There are not enough wild lands to support a grizzly population. Too many people live in these areas, creating big problems with a high probability of human and bear encounters. I would love to see the grizzlies in California, but it's not feasible. Get rid of the people and then it could be feasible. And we'll bring on some more people, our callers. Let me go to you, Neil in Bodega. You're on.
Yeah, I was just going to suggest that we let the grizzly bear expand to where they can and foster the idea of wildlife corridors. Grizzlies will go where it's all right for them to go. And the idea of introducing them to places is a little bit human-centered and not realistic for the bear, maybe. And I would just like to put that idea forward.
I'm glad you did. Greg Lozinski, what about wildlife corridors and following what the caller is suggesting here?
Well, I think that's a very good suggestion. Again, the bear can survive just about anywhere, it's at a level that only it can tell what is acceptable. We as humans can look at it and say, oh, that's where a bear should be. But again, I think the idea of having bears move out and go into areas, and again, it's going to be piece of ground by piece of ground that's going to be analyzed by the bear, so to speak. And so anywhere where you can create corridors, we work to do that with easements and other private lands, as well as with state and federal lands. Those places that bears will expand, again, where they are socially accepted along with the biological suitability. And for the brown bear, biologically, they can be just about anywhere. It's that social aspect that's going to be a key factor. But again, we encourage bears to go where humans will allow them to be, but it literally varies from town to town.
And let me thank Neil for his call. I want to go right to another caller, and this is Noah, who's joining us from Philadelphia. Noah, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, and I am a National Park Service wilderness biologist at Sequoia National Park. I just wanted to make a distinction between what one of your guests said. He mentioned that bringing the grizzly in would be an invasive species because the California grizzly is extinct. But there's a big difference between an exotic and an invasive species. An exotic species comes from somewhere else, but an invasive species has demonstrably negative impacts on the ecosystem. And in a lot of the impacted environments, which realistically most of our so-called wildlands in the United States are, bringing in species that are exotic doesn't necessarily produce problems for that ecosystem. It can actually really help bring it back. You can look at the way that river otters have been reintroduced in a lot of estuaries and brackish environments on the coast, because the sea otter along the west coast has been largely driven extinct. Its populations are not extinct, but its populations greatly reduced from what it used to be. And their reintroduction has been really good for the kelp forests and the biodiversity along those areas where they've been. So I know there's a lot of controversy about what impacts the grizzlies would necessarily have, but I just want to say there is a big difference between calling a species invasive and exotic.
Yeah, thank you for that distinction, Noah. Good to hear from you. Appreciate the call. And let me get to Dave next, who's been waiting patiently. Dave, you're on the air.
Hi. I just got back from a hike in the Sierra Nevada. I did a solo hike in Sequoia National Park. It was to Alta Peak. I started at 4,000 feet and went up to 7,000 feet and went up to 11. It was a beautiful hike. The first 5 miles was in the forest, and the last two was above the tree line. This is an idea of putting grizzlies in national parks is the worst idea I have ever heard of. It's dangerous enough to be out there, and, you know, there was, like, kids 13 years old doing some of these hikes. I do a lot of solo hikes. Having grizzlies in national parks, what you're going to create is one extinct species, and that's the hiker. Right now, you can't even carry bear spray in national parks in California. It's against the law. And that's because black bears aren't considered that dangerous. They're shy of human beings. You put grizzlies out there, and you're going to do away with the trails that we have out there. People will not be able to use those parks the way we use them now.
All right, Dave, I thank you for the call. And Brian shares some historical background. The Bay Area was full of brown bears when Juan Bautista de Anza first visited in 1776. Father Pedro Font, who was with him, wrote in his diaries, which make for very interesting reading, that many Native Americans they encountered in the East Bay had what appeared to be huge scars from grizzly bear attacks or hunts. And another caller joining us, this time from Alameda. John, you're on the air. Morning.
Thank you. I think all the concerns about grizzly bears being hazardous to humans are interesting, because if we're worried about harm to humans, we should ban automobiles and ban people from driving and ban a lot of other common things that we accept, with, you know, 40,000 people dying across the country every year on our highways. The habitat destruction in the U.S. is another example of our species being very destructive. My question, since the wildlife biologists have answered some of this, my original one, what are the environmental habitat benefits along the lines of what has been talked about with river otters and beavers and so on being reintroduced, of having grizzlies in the environment.
Who wants to step up to the plate here? I think Jeff Miller looks like he may chomp on the bit here. Go ahead.
Well, I think anywhere where it's possible, it's always a good idea to bring back the top predators in an ecosystem. And when you take them away, we saw this with wolves, all your ecosystem interactions can unravel and it can have all kinds of unintended consequences. Flip side, there could be unintended consequences bringing them back. But I think some of the positive things that bears would do to their environment is certainly control some of their prey populations. I do agree that it would probably dramatically change the concentrations in areas of black bears in California, certainly deer populations. And they also shape their ecosystems. They do a lot of digging and transport seeds and plants. So
there is an ecological argument. Yeah, there definitely is. But before we say goodbye to everybody here, Greg Lisinski, I want to go back to you and hear maybe some safety tips for people who might be hiking up in Yellowstone or whatever, other than bear spray.
Well, of course, we do recommend bear spray for whenever you're
out.
Does
bear spray work? Tina wants to know.
Bear spray is incredibly effective, far more so than a gun. It's the right tool for a reaction situation, and it definitely works. So we would encourage people to carry it and have it accessible. And it works on just about anything with a mucous membrane, so that includes humans. So it's not a bad tool to have.
I was in a situation in Tahoe. A bear came in to the kitchen, called out wildlife people, and they came and they said, "Bubba, get out of here." And they chased Bubba out of there. They were obviously familiar with him.
That's a black bear.
That's a black, yeah, black bear, right? That's not the grizzly.
Not grizzlies.
Let me thank all our guests, Craig Miller, Jeff Miller, and Greg Lisinski and Peter Elagona. Thank you all for being a part of this morning's program. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11. An hour is repeated 10 to 11 in the evening. We thank all our producers and our engineer and our general manager and our senior editor and for all of us at KQED. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.